Blog Talk Radio.
And blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Places. I'm Sister Charlene Muhammad, your guest host for this evening. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is his servant and messenger. And we are so excited to have you join us this evening for Elevated Places. And just a little bit about the show. Elevated Places is founded and created by our dear beloved Sister Minister Ava Muhammad. She is a gifted attorney, spiritual advisor, and author of the powerful and popular book, Real Love. Minister Ava was the student national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University and was a member of the New York Bar and has been featured in Essence magazine, and this magazine named her one of America's most powerful black women. Minister Ava, there is a beautiful tribute to her. Look at it, the Final Call newspaper, an entire tribute as she recently made her transition to Allah. And so Elevated Places is striving to continue the legacy of our beloved founder, Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with her. Please, we encourage you. We ask you to visit MinisterAva.com, MinisterAva.com for books and masterclasses by Dr. Ava, and also spread the word to others that her works continue to uplift and illuminate our journey on the path to return to our original selves. And before we get into our guest tonight, which is going to be, inshallah, Sister Saudia Muhammad, who is a licensed clinical social worker and who works as a psychotherapist. I would like to begin or take us further into tonight's presentation with In the News. And I don't know, I think, did I say I'm Sister Charlene Muhammad? And very honored to be your guest host. So In the News tonight, The Final Call newspaper cover story currently, Winter Storm Wreaks Havoc. And also in this same issue, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's center page article, The Divine Destruction of America, Can She Avert It? So we see across the country that the judgment of Allah has struck into America. And I just want to pinpoint one bit about that headline. The natural strength of God's power over nature is manifesting more and more of the four great judgments of rain, hail, snow, and earthquakes. We can bear witness. This is sweeping across America from coast to coast. Millions of people are still dealing with the aftermath of the latest weather event that has hit the United States. We have frigid temperatures that have gripped America and a winter storm, and this is a bomb cyclone that at press time, this has left more than 1.5 million people without power. This storm, this bomb cyclone, has caused thousands of flight cancellations and flooding across the country. Now, this began during the week of December 22nd, 25th. This, according to the National Weather Service, that I can tell you, you can look across, there's still flooding. California is under a severe storm. The rain just stopped today. There's the southern states are being hit. And so wherever you are in the country, you know, you can bear witness to this. One other thing I want to highlight out of this in this current issue is the struggle for justice and how it continues for inmates in U.S. prisons. And this article is written by Brother Michael Z. Muhammad. In 2022, he writes about the plight of Black and Indigenous political prisoners and inmates in general in the U.S. and how that's remained stagnant for many, despite intensified calls for their freedom by advocacy groups and prominent organizations. This is such as the Jericho Movement, and this same year saw a few critical developments in legislative reform, with several initiatives securing gains in the form of sentencing, adjustments, compassionate release, drug policy, and prosecutorial reforms. Also, now, just a few headlines, if you will. May Allah be pleased with our dear brother Julius Muhammad of Muskegon Heights. He was shot and killed. There is our national section article about that, as well as a letter of condolences and prayers by the Nation of Islam and Executive Council. We have the hidden cost, risk, hurt customers of buy now, pay later companies. This is, you know, hearkening to these similar to the payday loans, but that's not quite what this is saying. This is saying that buy now, pay later can seem like a shopper's dream, something you want but can't afford, can easily be purchased using credit products like Affirm, Afterpay, or Kiana. Your payments are spread out from weeks to months, typically in four payments over 6 weeks, and you can select when and how you pay it off. Sounds good, right? Not so fast, says Nisa Muhammad. She says that a sister, this is by Sister Nisa Islam Muhammad, she says that a closer look at these products reveals that they often have hidden costs and risk. That includes late fees, increased credit card interest, and increased overdraft fees. What happens if you don't make your payment on time? What happens if you don't receive the item or service you purchased? These are just a few things that she's highlighting in her story. And then to round it out, and I will introduce our guest because there's more and more and more. This special section, COVID-19 and the U.S. policy of depopulation, we have electronics is trying to embarrass me here, but thank you everyone for your patience. In the special section, COVID-19, the U.S. policy of depopulation, unmasking Black America, this talks about all of the different dangers, the scientists going over the health adverse effects of masking, and it raises the question, if the pandemic is over, as an unmasked President Biden said in September on 60 Minutes, this he was referencing the lack of mask wearing all around him. The question is raised, why is it that Blacks are still attached to masking? Also, the depopulation brief, which highlights more Twitter files show clear COVID, truth, suppression, and more. And then to round it out, there's something, forgive me, please, I think I might be getting confused, but I thought we had something with an interview with Brother Ilya Rashad speaking about the UFOs, the wheels, and the baby planes, and also that there are more by the military. But that is it for In the News, and thank you all for your patience with that. And now I would like to, I would like to introduce our guest. And so please invite someone. You have time now. Call a family member, a relative, a friend. Sharing is caring. Ask them to bring their questions, their thoughts, their comments. Sister Saudia Muhammad is here, and she is a licensed clinical social worker who works as a psychotherapist. Our sister is right out of headquarters, Chicago Mosque Mariam. Also, she is a published author and has spent most of her professional career working in social services, including child welfare, community services, and in clinical settings for many years. Since completing her master's in work, Sister Saudia has worked providing individual therapy to many people experiencing depression, anxiety, and adjustment disorder. She is passionate about destigmatizing mental health and therapy among communities of color and within the Islamic State especially, in all phases due to Allah. Her primary focus is working with women, particularly Muslim women, though not exclusively. She is committed to working to destigmatize the idea of therapy, especially among the Black community and Muslim community. When she isn't working, our sister enjoys cooking, baking, traveling, collecting art, and writing. She has written several articles and published two books, some of those in the Final Call newspaper, I might add. She is currently working on several literary projects addressing mental health and well-being. Sister Saudia is extremely passionate about living a healthy, holistic lifestyle. And I can tell you that Sister Saudia walks the walk, because you can look at her pages in social media and she's expressing that. In addition to writing for The Final Call, she has published a therapy journal entitled Therapied. It is available on all Amazon platforms. It is a therapy journal. Sister Saudia, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Elevated Places.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Saline, and it is indeed an honor to be on this amazing show.
Yes, it is. All praises be to Allah. Well, let's get right into it, Sister. Before, everyone, you know, we're going to be taking your questions at the top of the hour, but feel free to put them in the chat on the Facebook page as well as text. My first question is, what inspired you to become a therapist?
Wow, what inspired me? You know, I have always had a desire to help people, even as a child. And when I started out when I was in college, thinking I was going to be a doctor, and that changed very quickly when I had a early morning chemistry class, and I realized this is not for me. I'm not about that 8 a.m. chemistry life. So I still knew I wanted to help people, and knew I wanted to do something in terms of helping people. And so I ended up majoring in psychology, and that was a perfect fit for me because though I did not set out to do what I'm doing now as a psychotherapist, I have always been that person that people went to when they needed to talk, or that person that people went to that needed encouragement or motivation. And so becoming, after, you know, doing many things in the field of social services, becoming a licensed clinician was just the perfect fit because though this is what I do as a profession, it really just feels so natural and organic and almost feels as if I'm not working. So it really is a passion for me, and I feel that I am living and walking in my calling as a therapist.
Congratulations, and all praise is due to Allah for that. Now, I want to ask this question, and let me give the number out so that Sister Charlene doesn't carry away with the show and not invite anyone else. The number to call is 563-999-3065, and press 1 to ask a question or make a comment. 563-999-3065. Press 1 to get in the host queue. Sister Saldia, 2023, how would you define, what is the definition of therapy and therapist? Because, you know, in part of reducing or eradicating the stigma, I think that's a good place to start with even defining it for someone.
Yes, great question. And a lot of people are not exactly clear on what therapy is. A therapy or counseling or psychotherapy is used as a means to help a person address maybe behaviors, thought patterns, issues that they may be experiencing, or various traumas that they may have experienced in one life. And it allows a person to be in a safe space, whether that's in person with a clinician or, like many therapists like myself, kind of turn to virtually having individual sessions with clients. Therapy allows a person to maybe discuss, you know, major life-altering events such as a divorce or loss of a loved one or loss of a job or any kind of emotional discomfort that they may have experienced. And the treatment or the aim of therapy by a clinician is to help a person be guided towards, you know, various solutions to their issues or their problems. As therapists, we don't tell people what to do, but we really provide a space for a person to kind of walk through some of what they've experienced. And sometimes with some of the things that clients may have to talk about, they have experienced things that they've never talked to anyone about. They've never felt comfortable, or maybe they may have felt some level of judgment. And so therapy is really a safe space. It's a space where it truly is a judgment-free zone. It's a space where a person can be as vulnerable as they wish and as vulnerable as they like, and they don't have to fear someone, having all kinds of opinions about the things that they've experienced or the thoughts that they may have. So it really allows an individual to just be able to express themselves in a way that they may not have really had the opportunity to do so.
Thank you. And I'm envisioning it right now. Certainly not all. Dr. Joy DeGruy, formerly
yes.
Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary, but Dr. Joy DeGruy, post-traumatic slave syndrome, comes to mind. I interviewed her once in my show on Pacifica, and Dr. Joy had the audience rapt as she was talking about this, like our men, and she painted the picture, or she told an anecdote of a big, you know, black guy, which is, you know, a tall black man, a brown man, sitting across mm-hmm. from a young white female therapist, and just the dynamic of him being, you know, threatening without even trying, just his presence alone. And so I just mentioned that. I won't give all the context there, but it's post-traumatic slave syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy, because the idea is of someone like you, a black therapist, or maybe someone that's culturally competent, if it's an indigenous, whatever, if it's one of our Asian brothers or sisters, or whatever culture it is, that is more comfortability there, would you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've seen Dr. DeGruy, and she is absolutely amazing, but you bring up an excellent point. She is awesome, but you bring up such a good point, because one of the things that I found with clients that I see is that they reach out to me because I'm a black woman. I'm black, and they can relate to me in some way, shape, or form. I have Muslim clients from our community. I have Muslim clients from other countries, and they reach out to me because I'm a Muslim. And they can say, you know, in the midst of the session, Alhamdulillah, and I'm not going to look at them like, what language are you speaking? What are you saying? That I can relate to
right.
them. You know, when we're when we're observing the holy month of Ramadan, we can, you know, talk about how are you feeling today. You ready for the session? You know, like, you know, so we can kind of have that. We can even vibe on that level, and you know, it's one of those things where my clients and I am the clinician, but you know. When, if you've ever been out and you see another black woman and you're in an all white space, and you know, as black people, especially as women, we can kind of look at each other like, okay, I see you, sis. It's kind of the same vibe, you know, where my clients can say things. I may have clients there, you know, they're at the house. They may be at home in their bonnet, in their bathrobe, and oh, you know, I should be, no, you good, sis, you in your house. So, you know, come as you are, and being able to have that level of freedom, being able to have that level of comfortability where you can be yourself in your house and you don't have to worry about playing to somebody else who you think is going to judge you. You know, you come in with trauma, but you got somebody, you in the back of your mind, oh, my God, my therapist is going to think something is wrong with me because I got rollers in my ear. No, I'm not like that. And so my clients love me and love the fact that as a black woman, I can relate. I could maybe be your mother, your sister, your cousin, your aunt, your next door neighbor. But you, when you see me, you relate to me in some way, fashion, shape, or form. And that is something that is so freeing for someone who comes to you who wants to share about whether it's hurt, whether it's pain, whether it's trauma, and you're able to do that in a safe space. You're able to do that with someone who gets you. They get you because you look like them. They get you because, you know, they can relate to whatever it is, or in whatever way that you present. So cultural competency and being able to relate to someone from a cultural level is so very important. And it's a piece that oftentimes clinicians, especially those who are non-black, they sometimes feel very uncomfortable talking about it because, you know, it's sometimes that elephant in the room when you may talk about how you can't connect with the client or the client who doesn't want to share a lot because, you know, sometimes that client may not say, we don't have nothing in common. So I don't feel safe with you. I don't feel safe sharing my innermost, you know, whatever experiences because of the history of the white man. And women in this country, but throughout the world.
And guess what? Now you tell me if I got it right. Maybe 2 minutes back on the phone, or 1 hour ago on break, or yesterday at work. You know, these microaggressions, which they're not so micro these days. You know, because once you add them up, they become very huge. But, you know, I just wanted to see what you thought about that. You know, you're right.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
Right. What is your clientele? Do you see more or less of young, given the pandemic, young people, or you have more middle age or elderly demographic, or is it just, you know, just a mix across the board?
I have mostly millennials. I have clients who, most of my clients are under 30. And they relate to me. Of course, I don't tell them my age, so they think we're peers. Ha ha. But
come on, keep doing that.
Back but no, but no, for real. But most of my clients are millennials. I have a few clients who are like in their 60s, but most are under 30. And, you know, I find that the population of the ones who are under 30 or even maybe under 35, they are very serious about maintaining their emotional and mental health. Very serious, very vocal. And at the start of the pandemic, I got an influx of clients, and one of the main themes or the common themes that my clients would say was that I thought I had it together before the pandemic. I thought I was functioning quite well, and what a lot of people realized once everything shut down was that they were kind of, you know, coasting on empty. You know how if you are driving in your car and you got a little bit of gas and you hoping that you have enough to kind of make it to the next point, well, imagine if that's how you spend your all day, every day. And that's how a lot of people were functioning. They were like literally on the edge or hanging on by a string. And when the pandemic occurred, it wasn't like all of a sudden, you know, the rug came up from under them. They had always been functioning in that space of kind of on the edge. But when the pandemic hit and no one had any means by which to prepare for just everything shutting down and everyone having to you know, be at home with yourself or be at home with your spouse or your children, and really you can't go anywhere. So you start to either see behaviors within yourself or maybe, you know, behaviors that you may see in the people around you. And, you know, maybe it was a difficult thing to process. And so during that time, a lot of people just discovered or admitted, I would say, that they were really having some difficulty, you know, and kind of, you know, being able to have awareness is the first step in addressing any issue. You have to acknowledge that this is an issue. So.
Wow. Sister. Okay, look, call in with your questions. Take this opportunity. This beautiful being is here to assist. 563-999-3065, 563-999-3065. Press 1 to get in the queue, ask a question, or make a comment. Or, Sister Saldia, you might have found yourself free-falling like Sister Charlene, but you're numb, and so you didn't really realize you was moving on the way down to the ground.
Yeah,
I gotta be honest.
Yeah,
you know, like I've written.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you,
about
even
that.
Myself, it was a struggle. It was a struggle, and I got to the point where I became overwhelmed as a clinician because I was trying to help so many people, and what I discovered was. My services, I didn't realize, you know, it's like, you know, when you have this, you know, I don't know, priceless diamond, but you just think it's just, you know, just some cubic zirconia, and you don't really value it. And I didn't so much value the service that I offer, because it was like, oh, this is what I do. But it was when I started to get client after client after client after client, and I realized, I was like, oh my God, our people are really suffering. I knew we, and certainly I'm in no means saying I didn't know we were suffering as a people, but I mean in terms of our not tending to our emotional health, because there's a difference between someone saying, you know, like, you know, I love to use metaphors. Like, if you just take your car to get, you know, a regular whatever, oil change, you know, that's a part of the regular maintenance of your vehicle. That's different from, you know, you have to get a complete, I don't even know why I gave a car example, because, you know, I don't know what you think about.
Let me rescue you, sister. Transmission, engine overhaul.
Yes,
a flat tire.
Thank you.
Do you win?
Thank you, my sister.
Thank you.
Yes. So those are two different things. One is regular maintenance. It's a part of, you know, the things that you do. And then the other is this complete overhaul thing. Well, so many people were needing that overhaul, and was just like, oh my God. And it really was overwhelming for me that I had to slow it down, and I had to say, you know, let me stop taking clients. And it was very difficult, because when you're wanting to help people, having to say no to someone that says, I'm in need. But we know that self-preservation, I'm no good to anyone if I'm, you know, just sitting in the corner ready to just kind of, you know, go bonkers. So I needed to make sure that I was taking care of me, and part of that process was being able to say no and just manage in the way in which I was able to serve the clients that I have and not stretch myself to the point where I may be accepting a client, but I'm not giving that client my best or my all because I'm stretched to the limit. So, you know, and that's just for any of us. We have to be able to know when we're about to tap out. We need to stop. We shouldn't even get to that point where we have to get so out of ourselves where we just can't see ourselves kind of falling. We need to be able to be aware where if we need to take a break, if we need to take a breather, if we need to sit down and stop and collect ourselves, and then say, okay, let me get myself together, and now I can come back and do what I need to do. Because I've, you know, rested sufficiently, I've done what I needed to do, and now I can get back to, you know, the job of helping my people.
Wow, wow. So beautiful, sister. Thank you so much.
Praise
I have
be
a question,
to Allah.
And yes, and the first, well, let me invite the caller, 563-999-3065. You're going to be taking your calls at the top of the hour, 563-999-3065. Be sure to press 1 to ask a question or comment. Sister Sardi, I have to slow down sometimes and do that because, you know, we have an audience and we have people that are tuning in for something, and I would just get all kinds of questions that I want answered. But this question is, how do you in your practice overcome the silent but very prevalent stigma against Black men accessing therapy? And let me say this. This is from our dear brother, beloved student minister Jamil Muhammad, who was going to be with us, but due to unforeseen circumstances, is not. Brother Jamil, we miss you and pray for you. So, okay, the question, how do you in your practice overcome the silent but very prevalent stigma against Black men accessing therapy?
Excellent question. When I think about specifically the clients that I currently see and that I've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, a fair share of those clients have been Black men, young Black men. And, you know, we all have feelings. We all have emotions and we all have experienced things. And we know that we live in a society, especially depending on what your age is, and not exclude or not including millennials for a lot of people, let's say 40 and up. But men, our Black men in particular, the show of emotions deem as weak, right? And so if we function throughout society, throughout our community, throughout our families, throughout, you know, whether it's in our marriages or relationships or at your job, you have feelings, you have thoughts, you have emotions, but you feel that if you express those, then you're weak. Well, emotions got to go somewhere. They don't disappear. They go somewhere. So if they're not expressed verbally, they'll be expressed through our actions. They'll be expressed through, yelling and screaming. It'll be expressed through, in your relationships, having poor communication because you're not able to maybe respond to your spouse when she says X, Y, and Z. Maybe you disagree with whatever is said, but instead of saying, you know, I don't agree with that, maybe you yell and scream. Or maybe you experience some form of trauma and no one told you that it was okay to cry. No one told you that it was okay to say I'm hurt. No one told you that it was okay to just acknowledge that something happened.
Mm-hmm.
So what I try and do with with all of my clients, but definitely with my male clients, is I try and make sure that they're aware that it's okay to feel. It is okay. It is human to feel. And none of us are perfect save Allah and His messengers. So that means that if none of us are perfect, that means that we're privy to errors, we're privy to making mistakes, we're privy to even responding in ways that could be, less than stellar. So, you know, we have this whole range of emotions. We have this whole range of experiences that sometimes we don't get it right. And it happens. But being able to express when things don't go our way or we don't like the way that something is moving, or just being able to acknowledge whatever it is that we're feeling. Sometimes along with being able to express our emotions comes being able to communicate what it is that we're feeling, because it's not just enough to say I'm in pain, but how do you communicate that you're in pain, you know? And so sometimes it can be difficult because you have to kind of go against the tide, what the normal or the default setting is to not respond, because sometimes people will shut down, or the default, because everyone has a kind of default setting when they get into a certain space. You know, when I'm really upset, I won't talk. I won't, how are you doing? I'm fine. you will get a one-word answer. And that's my default setting. And for me, it's you know, that's a pretty benign default setting. But for some people, their default setting may be yelling and screaming and punching a wall. That's not so benign.
A person.
Exactly. And so in that, being able to understand that it's okay to acknowledge what you feel. You are human, so you do feel. And it's not weak to feel. It's not, doesn't make you a punk. It doesn't make you less than a man to acknowledge your emotions. And being able to feel comfortable in that helps to destigmatize some of the stigma that may be associated with talking to a therapist, talking to a clinician. And, you know, I'm a Black woman and I'm a clinician. We need more Black male clinicians. And I don't have a problem in saying we need more Black male clinicians. We really do, because I think there's a way that men can talk to men. And,
right.
you know, and as women, there's a way that we can talk to women that men can't talk to us in that way. So I think just like having that kind of connection that we have with our sisters, I think men need to have that connection with another Black men. Specifically need to have that connection with another male clinician. Now, does not mean that you can't have a clinician that, you know, is a male, a brother seeing a sister. Doesn't mean that. But personally, and I even think professionally, I think there would be a greater impact in many ways for another man to have a clinician who's another man, but we don't have as many. I don't know what the statistics are, but I do know for a fact there are not as many Black male clinicians.
Wow. Thank you for that. That's very interesting. You know, when you were speaking about, you know, the factor, the God factor in this, you reminded me of overcoming difficulties. Out of study guide number 3, this is the self-improvement.
Oh, my God,
I was
just reading that, like, right before we, because I was like, I need to overcome the difficulty of my speaking. My word is bound to a lie. I was study guide number 3.
Praise be to Allah. We're in tune. And, of
yes,
course, I just the Minister Ava Muhammad, you know, transcribed, you know, took these.
Yes.
By pen, transcribed
yes.
the minister's, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan's words, and as it has been said, gave them back in this form, you know, helped, such an aid to him. And this is how her work lives on. Self-improvement, the basis for community development. These are the study guides that the Honorable Minister Farrakhan has given us. And in overcoming difficulty, it starts out, I mean, just it states this fact that Allah, God, has said in the Holy Quran that he has created man and woman to face difficulty. It is a general law of nature that as night follows day, likewise, ease follows difficulty. Both the Bible and Holy Quran teach us that struggle is ordained for man by Allah, God. I do want to add this, too, as we know that we've had and we're taught that the ease is in the difficulty, right, Sister Sardia?
Yeah.
Ava has stated, been taught that by our teacher, and I just want to point out that study guide lists Surah 21, the prophets, Surah 93,
yeah.
the brightness of the day, and Surah 94, the expansion, which is Surah in English, is a chapter. But ease follows difficulty, but within the difficulty is the ease. But go ahead, sister. We have the therapist here. Your thoughts about that, and we get some more questions. Sister, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Oh, pardon me. I was saying, go on and continue your thoughts about that. We do have the doctor in the house, so to speak. So let's hear your thought about that. And I was about to go on a tangent.
Regarding the ease being in the difficulty?
But more of also what you were speaking about, what you were gleaning from the study of that study guide just today.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, everything that we experience in our life, sometimes we see it as a difficulty, and it's not always a difficulty. Sometimes it's a lesson. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it mm-hmm. is our being confronted with some level of uncomfortability, but that's not necessarily mm-hmm. a bad thing. We sometimes find or will name our difficulty as this thing that's bad, but it's not always bad. It could be just something to help give us discipline. You know, when we come into the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we gave up a lot of things. Well, is the giving up of those things bad, or did we gain from giving up the, you know,
right,
whatever it is that we gave up in order to have a life more disciplined, you know, in order to even in someone, you know, overcoming the difficulty in whether it's addiction, you know, the addiction of drugs, addiction in alcohol, addiction in whatever it is, that process.
Food.
Yes. And you know what? Here's the thing. Food. With even food. Of all the addictions, food is the one thing that we can't give up. See, we can live a life.
Come on.
Never. We don't ever have to ever smoke, drink, do drugs. All of that stuff could be eradicated from the planet. And guess what? We would be just as happy. We would be just as productive. But when you think about food addiction, you can't stop eating food. We need food. So the addiction in that, it's about you have to go deeper than just, you can't stop eating. You need to eat. But you have to understand, which is why in How to Eat to Live, we're taught the science of food. There's a science to food.
Yeah.
There's a science to why we eat the nutritious navy bean. There's a science to why the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us to, you know, stay away from eating too many sweets. There's a science to why we're taught to fast. So everything that we do is linked to a science. But when you're talking about food, people, when they're addicted to food, I've never met anyone that's addicted to, you know, healthy foods. I've never met anyone.
They call
it
the comfort food.
Right. You know, they're, you know, I don't know, addicted to, you know, avocados and fruits and vegetables and you know, navy beans and whole milk. No, people are addicted to those things that we're given by Satan that typically are things that are low in nutritional value, very high in calories, and usually have some type of chemical component that allows one to not just have, it's not just the food, it's the addiction to whatever the chemical component is, you know.
Yeah.
And so with that, it you have to, because I see clients who have issues with weight, and there's a whole nother, you have to literally change the mindset, which we know this, but it's not you've got to eliminate food, because you can't eliminate food. We need food. You know, you can eliminate every other kind of addiction, whether, you know, every addiction out there, you can say you can never do it again and you would be okay. But when you're talking about issues with food, you can't just, food isn't the issue. It's our mindset. It's the being able to understand that, especially when you're eating the wrong kinds of food, you're not even addicted to the actual food itself. You're addicted to whatever that you know, whatever that chemicalized additive that's added to X, Y, and Z. Because your body needs the nutrition. Your body craves nutrition. But if you have, you know, whatever, some kind of chemical that overrides that, then the nutrition kind of gets set aside and your body is craving, you know, all of the other additives and things. So, you know, addiction is – oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm co-signing too much. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying that addiction is one of those things where thing begins with a thought, and there
That's
is a
right.
physical component. There is a physical component, but the mind is more. You have to allow your mind to take control of your body. And oftentimes, that's where the struggle comes in addressing addiction, and you know, it's not, it's certainly not easy. But sometimes we approach the ideal of addiction. We're not fully prepared to approach it in a way where we can see the kind of success that we would like, which is to, you know, stop the whatever the habit is. But, you know, as I was saying, with food addiction, it's a whole different kind of you have to address it differently.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And we'll be coming to your calls at the top of the hour, and we have some more questions that came in through other means. But, you know, sister, when you talk about letting that mind control the body, let's also illuminate here that right mind is what yeah. we're talking about, obviously, too, because we have the double mind, and we're not talking about that statement within or that reactive mind, you know, that's stirred up by this messaging. You know, our thoughts, people's thoughts can just go away with them, for instance. But it's not just, it's not by happenstance. You know, look, you see Cane's, Chick-fil-A, certainly Starbucks.
Yes.
I used to be like, oh, God, thank God that Starbucks is really easy to turn into, because I have to go here. I got to go to the courthouse at a press conference, and it's an easy turn right here. No. But then it's like, I went across the corner, cat a corner, across the street. Oh, and by the way, over there in the grocery store, wait a minute, why are you so prevalent, you know? And
right.
That's I don't want to digress too far, but that's just the thought, like these messaging. I heard Brother Nuri, Student Minister Nuri, point out once in one of his lectures how, you know, these movie screens, when you're at the movie, you know, there's different reels that are empty, but they're not, and they're just not even split seconds. You can't detect them with your naked eye, but there's a message there in these reels, and it's constant bombardment of this quote-unquote comfort food. But also we have the solution.
And so we just can bombard ourselves with how to eat to live. And also, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan teaches us, and it's been, you know, telling us, admonishing us to strengthen our connection to Allah. Just let him have us. Just submit and surrender our whole will to his. And it is not easy, but we can partner, you know, we can partner with each other in exercising and walking and, you know, how did you do today? We have many different things. We have your journal, for instance, which we'll talk some more about. You know, all of these things, just actual facts, right, assisted therapist, just actual facts, and confronting it is the word that you used. Well, let me ask another question, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. And by the way, this is Elevated Places, and our beautiful guest is Saudia Muhammad, a licensed clinical social worker who also works as a psychotherapist. I love your website name, The Muslim Therapist, and you can email her at themuslimtherapist19@gmail.org, and her site is themuslimtherapist.org, and certainly go to ministerava.com. as well. And so another question is this: what would you say to people who think they can't take that time due to others around them, or they aren't even aware of what's happening? So some helpful words to them, look, them people, to those.
In terms of, you know, we all need help. I mean, to put it plain, none of us, right, to do this, just, let's just make it plain. We all need help. None of us are an island. And, you know, as much as we may desire to want to do things on our own, being able to, it's really hard to be objective by yourself. It's hard to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that it can't, but there is a difficulty factor in your being objective and looking at your own situation and being able to consult with someone who is not biased, being able to consult with someone who literally functions to try and help you navigate through whatever issues or whatever concerns or whatever problems that you may be experiencing from a non-biased perspective. Let me be clear. There are, in every profession, there are those who excel in their profession, and there are those who do not. And sometimes what I've experienced is sometimes I've had clients who have had therapists who were not a good fit, you know. And sometimes when you have someone that isn't a good fit, that can turn you off from the whole process. You know, how many women have been in a bad relationship and all of a sudden they have an issue with men? No, that was just that man that you may have had an issue with. Sis, that's not all men. But sometimes we take that same mindset. They may have had a not so great encounter with the therapist. Sometimes I've also noticed that, you know, I only see adults. I don't see children, but I've had clients who may have had therapy as children. And one of the things that we don't do as adults, when a parent may take a child to the therapist or select a therapist, usually that child isn't a part of the process. And so that child may not connect with the therapist. Maybe the parents think that the therapist is a good fit, but the child is like, I don't like you like that. And so the child may not have a good therapeutic experience because they're not connecting with that clinician. And I'm using that as an example, but it's the same with us as adults. Maybe you've had an experience with a clinician who was white, who may have made you explain everything that you said because they didn't get it, or they may have invalidated everything that you said because they have their own set of biases, and so they bring their biases into the therapy room or the therapy space, and instead of feeling like you're in a safe space, you feel offended. You feel that you have to, you know, kind of defend everything that you say, which is not what the therapeutic experience should be. And so I would say to anyone who may be considering or who may be on the fence or unsure, sometimes you have to find someone who will be a good fit. You may not find that the first time you seek
right.
out a person, but I would say to do your research. I would never recommend for someone to have a session with a clinician that they haven't had a consultation with, you know, had the opportunity to talk to that person, you know, and the consultation doesn't have to be a long, you know, it's not a session, so it may be maybe 15 mm-hmm. minutes, but you're wanting to kind of feel the client out or feel the clinician out. And even as a clinician, I'm feeling the client out, you know, because I only see clients that may have certain issues. I don't see clients who have severe mental health issues. So it's my duty when I speak with a potential client to kind of see, well, what are the issues that the client would like to address? Am I the right fit for the client? Because I don't want to do a disservice for an individual who's seeking therapy knowing that I may not be able to handle some of the issues or concerns that they have. But as a client should really do their due diligence in finding out, well, how would I like to be treated in the therapy setting? You know, do I want someone that looks like me? Do I want someone that can relate to me? Do I want someone, you know, that is the same faith as I? Do I want someone who's the same sex as I? You know, whatever it is, you have to kind of have an ideal of someone that you can connect with. And that's not to say that every experience with a clinician that doesn't look like you would be a negative experience. I'm not saying that at all. But for those things that's important for you, and if having someone that looks like you is important, then that's something that you should seek out. And there's all kinds of resources by which you can try and vet and look for clinicians of color or clinicians, you know, that may be of a particular faith or sex.
Thank you. Thank you. And I also want to add to the, ask you to address this part of that as well. How about in terms of one taking time for themselves? You know, you spoke earlier about, you know, the element of going empty, of not going empty, right? And so can you also add or elaborate in terms of that, just not going empty, not running on empty, and someone taking time for themselves?
Yes. You know, the ideal of just being able to have self-awareness and just acknowledge when maybe you're not having a good day. You know, sometimes we can be triggered by various things and not really realize that, you know, maybe every time I hear this song, you know, I think about, you know, my grandmother who may have passed away. And when you're, if you're not aware, you can hear the song 10 times and 10 times you go into this solemn space. And but if you're aware, you're like, oh, and that song reminds me of, you know, blah, 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 blah. Or we can be triggered by other people. We can be triggered by anything that can sometimes, and triggers are not necessarily always bad. It's something that just remind you of a person, place, or thing. But when there's self-awareness, you're able to see, you know, I'm starting to get, I'm starting to feel stressed. So I think I need to take some time away. And, you know, oftentimes people will, we hear a lot about burnout. And burnout happens when, you know, we get to a point where there is no more care. I don't care. And sometimes conditions are set up that will unfortunately encourage burnout because, you know, depending on what the job is, you know, if you're overworking employees, if you are underpaying employees, you know, if you are creating these conditions where a person dreads going into work, well, that's just the perfect storm for burnout. I mention it because burnout doesn't happen overnight. Burnout isn't something that you love your job today and tomorrow you hate it. Burnout is it's sometimes it is a slow burn, and it's something that happens over time. And usually when people are in that space, they're not self-aware. They're not noticing changes in their mood or changes in their affect or changes in maybe when they're in various environments. And so one thing that I tend to do with my clients, I love to, you know, I'm that therapist that gives homework. And I always encourage my clients to really like log any changes and notice any kinds of shifts. And sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do because going back to what I said earlier about how we can sometimes function off this, you know, you're kind of functioning off fumes or you're functioning on from an autopilot kind of space, where you're not really aware of things. And a lot of times we see this, you know, you get up in the morning and you do whatever, and everything is very mechanical. There's the intention really isn't there because you're just kind of, you know, get up, got to make the donuts. It's just day in and day out. Right. It's just that kind of constant kind of drag on. And a lot of people function in that space. And going back to what I said earlier about how when the pandemic hit, everything had to stop. And people could not do their regular schmegular, this is what I do all the time. I go, I get my morning Starbucks, and I do this, and I do everything stopped. So people were left with their feelings, or they were left with, oh, wow, what am I going to do? And that kind of shocked people into a sense of self-awareness because, again,
that's right.
A lot of people were hanging on by a thread or running off fumes, and they weren't really as aware because they were so used to functioning in that space. So when you're able to notice any kind of shift in your behavior, any kind of changes, that's when you can begin to start noticing, you know, oh, yeah, every time so-and-so, you know, says this, you know, I feel a little agitated. I notice every time, blah, blah, blah. And so many of us, we're just kind of walking around blindly. But when you start to see things around, you know, like we're taught as Muslims to always be aware of our surroundings, right? We should never just kind of walk in and just I'm looking straight ahead. No, I should always know what's to the left of me, what's to the right of me, what's around. Well, you're aware, right? You're not walking in a fog where we know a lot of our people are walking in a fog because they're not really seeing what's around. But not even just from a security standpoint, being able to be so self-aware, you're noticing when one moment you were happy and now you're not? Or one moment maybe you were singing, you were humming, and you were really in a good space, but now your mood has changed. What has changed?
What's happened?
And but if you're not aware, you won't be able to pinpoint, oh, this happened. Oh, yeah, you know what? I heard, again, I may have heard that song, or someone may have came into the room. Maybe I smelled something that brought me to a certain space. So all of these things are components of self-awareness. And if we can begin to just notice, like be very intentional, like when you maybe do your bedtime routine, be very intentional. And instead of just kind of doing, okay, I'm going to take my shower at this and I'm going to do this, switch it up. And the moment there's a change, that's when you know, oh, I have to do this different because I normally take my shower at 10 o'clock. Well, I'm going to take it at this time because, you know, maybe I'm taking my shower and I'm listening to this and I'm doing that. And it's a routine. Well, if you change up the routine, that's one way to shake the default setting, because now something is different. So being able to have that moment of clarity where you're not just kind of doing this robotic whatever, but now you can be very observant of whatever it is. Again, sometimes we're not necessarily reared to even be self-aware. We're kind of, you know, reared to just do, and not really acknowledge our feelings, our emotions, any shifts. Well, what happens when you're feeling sad? Well, you know, I mean, how a lot of people just get over it. Not necessarily so easy. But if you don't even acknowledge it, you can't even get over it. So
you don't even know what it is. You don't even know what it is to get over. But there's something there, and I appreciate what you're saying. And I want the callers to know we're getting ready to come to you. I would like, thank you, sister, for that. I would like to take a few minutes. I'm going to take a few minutes now because you mentioned burnout. And I went right to it. I said, oh, my God, Minister Ava has a book. And thank you, Sister Donna. And we're coming to you, caller. Sister Donna is very instrumental in coordinating Minister Ava's e-books and actually transcribing them and helping to produce them and get them to us. And I just want to read this from her, which is listing what you said, and then we'll go to our first caller. And thank you all for being patient. In chapter one, she says, what is burnout? And you can order this at MinisterAva.com. I'm compelled to list this as, and thank you, Sister Saudia, for mentioning burnout. This is Minister Ava. What I would like to do today in accord with this beautiful press conference is to discuss a condition known commonly as burnout and how we can identify and recover from it. Most of us are suffering from it. We're just exhausted mentally, spiritually, physically, financially, emotionally drained. The general definition of burnout that the behavioral scientists give is, quote, a syndrome of emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and reduced personal accomplishment that can occur among individuals who are involved working with people, unquote. Exhaustion, depersonalization, and reduced personal accomplishment that occurs among individuals who do work that involves working with people, unquote. Minister Ava continues. So it's not only Minister Farrakhan. You and I are in a work that involves a great amount of interaction with other people. You are either working with people, or you are being called upon to move people, or you're in a situation where somebody is pressuring you. Now, add to that, coming up out of 400 years of slavery and the residual psychological damage of being in a society that hates black people, growing up and being shaped and taught by that society, so that our view of ourselves is the view that the slave master's children have taught us. Burnout is a response to the chronic emotional stress of dealing extensively with other human beings. Now, if the human beings that you're dealing with are troubled, burnout is more rapid and more devastating. So if you're dealing with black folks, you're dealing with troubled people starting at home and then moving out from there. Now, if you want a simple explanation of how the people respond to life while in burnout, look at the word itself. The word burn means heat, fire. Emotionally, it means anger. It is an anger, however, that is seething beneath the surface, ready to boil up and spill over at the slightest provocation, like cancer patients. And you know, black people don't contract or develop cancer as frequently, but we die from it more. We die from heart attacks. We die from high blood pressure and stroke because we are in a society where we have not been given an effective avenue to visit our feelings. But Allah God has come, and he has made a way for our salvation. Praise be to Allah, Lord of the world. Let us go to the phone calls right now. We will pull them in. I think our first caller is Brother Lewis, Atlanta. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Lewis. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Well, alaykum salam, Sister Charlene. How you doing? Can you hear
Wonderful.
Me?
Wonderful. And yourself, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, great, great. And we love your, we love what you and the research team have done and are doing with the COVID section of the final call. We make sure we read it, and we always introduce it when we're out with the final call newspaper to our people so they can get some more clarity on what's going on with the vaccines and the other medical situations that are happening.
So we
thank you all for that, and it's so great to hear this conversation. Just one quick thing, though. I think I'm addicted to bean pie, so, sis, I don't know if I'm going to give that up.
The whole nation.
But, yes, ma'am. But, no, my question is, and it's, I guess I was thinking on a theological question, but not really. Oh, and also, too, a lot of what you said, sis, I recall those are some of the principles we learned in Dianetics, too. As well, the things that you were saying. But I wanted to ask, put this out to you. What advice or counsel would you give to parents and players, particularly football players, after we all viewed what happened to our brother on a worldwide stage where he had to be revived twice to come back to life? And I'm hearing some parents, particularly mothers, who are now afraid for their young boys to be playing football. And I even heard today on a sports talk show, some of the NFL players said they don't know if they want to play this week. So what kind of, I guess, psychological uplift or what would you say to players who may be listening or to us as parents, because my stepson plays, and, you know, I know his mother sometimes worries about him out there on the field. What would you say to kind of deal with what we all saw right before our faces on the world stage? Thank you. I'll listen.
Thank you. Thank you. And Sister Saudia, let me make a point of reference here. He's speaking about Damar Hamlin, and, of course, this is our brother who played for the Buffalo Bills, and student minister Ishmael actually called for a prayer for him. And Brother Damar is beginning to awaken, moving his hands and feet according to his doctors. This is an ESPN report 6 hours ago that brother is beginning to awaken. But go ahead, Sister Saudia.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you, Brother Lewis, for your question. And, you know, I'm not a football fan, but obviously I heard about what happened to our brother, and certainly my prayers go out to him and his family, and having to experience him, the physical aspects of, you know, whatever was the cause of his injury. But from a clinical perspective, thought about the trauma that everyone that witnessed, particularly those that were in the stadium, his teammates, and, you know, the other individuals on the field, and just kind of experiencing that secondary trauma. And oftentimes when we think about trauma, we only limit it to an individual or the person that was the firsthand recipient of whatever the situation was. But secondary trauma comes when those who may have witnessed firsthand the traumatic event and been affected in or impacted in some kind of way, you know, certainly in any kind of activity, something such as football or boxing, where it is your body is going through trauma, just being, you know, hit or punched or, you know, constantly actively involving in you know, the sport itself. But, you know, when we see various kinds of situations like what happened with the brother, everyone was affected. And acknowledging that this was something that I witnessed, or this was something that I saw, whether it was, you know, on the news program or not, and that bothered me, or, you know, I was impacted by that. Oftentimes, a lot of times what we tend to do is we may become desensitized to traumatic things. You know, we hear every day on the news here in Chicago about someone getting killed or robbed or, you know, murdered or anything, and we hear it so much, or we may experience it so much, that we don't our sensory fulfilling is numb. And so I would say to really acknowledge what it is that you feel, to be able to put words to it, to be able to articulate it in some way. And that could be, you know, from an individual basis, just whether it's writing it out, or talking to someone and saying, you know, this impacted me because I was thinking about that could have been my son, that could have been my nephew, that could have been, you know, my husband, that could have been, you know, whatever. And this was how I was impacted by seeing that. Or I felt the hurt and pain of this young man's family, and knowing how much they love him, and being in that position of not knowing if he's going to make it. And so we experience a lot of trauma, but also a lot of secondary trauma, where we're always impacted by the things that we see, but oftentimes we're bombarded with so much negativity that we don't even take the time to acknowledge it, because it's so much. It's, you know, so much negativity on top of negativity on top of negativity, that, again, we can become very numb to it. So I hope that I answered or addressed your question, Brother Lewis.
Thank you, sister. Thank you. Brother Darrell, welcome to Elevated Places.
And Salam Alaikum, family. Happy Savior's Day.
Walaikum Salam. Happy Savior's Day to you, too.
Yes, to what Brother Lewis was saying, I was just, you know, thinking about, even though the minister told us to go into Dianetics, and a lot of us got caught up so deep, but that's all we hearing is Robert L. Hubbard, and the minister was kind of upset. He said, I didn't send you to go in and get caught up in it like just the teaching. I sent in you there to get help through your trauma and what you're going through and facing. And a lot of us have got turned off the track of the following of the teaching. But my question is, I was just thinking about going back into what the minister spoke about, the shock of the hour. That was around the time that the whole world shut down with the COVID. And the minister said, if you want to stop this particular virus, you have to reach up to heaven, which is praying to Allah. And he was telling the president the same thing, that you could avert this. But we are so caught up into fear. And it goes back to our lessons of put fear in us when we was a little boy and get, you know, taught us to eat the wrong food. And the devil could say, I didn't make her, I just called in and answered. And that's what happened with the vaccine. And the minister said it himself, some of you all, when he was speaking to us, that some of you all will take the shot. Now, here it is that it could show that we have these teachings, but yet we still, like the lesson, can you fool a Muslim? Say, not nowadays, but now you wonder, is that true? Because our family, believers are taking the shot out of fear of their job or whatever that may be going on. And that I could feel that it happened during marriage, sports.
Sir, may I ask what your question is?
Yes, I was speaking on about the vaccine that our people are taking out of fear. For example, my cousin just called and said one of my cousins that took the shot couldn't even walk. They had to rush it to the hospital, and they are not even treating them because they are looking at them like they are one of the ones that's in the circle of those who took the shot. And my question was, what will we be able to do to understand that we are going through something that the minister already had warned us, but our people are still taking the shot? And that was basically my question. What will we be able to do to understand that we're in trouble and not listening to the divine teachings of the minister? So that was my question. And I know Sister Ava was saying that, you know, separation is the best solution. And that's what we are going to have to start doing now, is get back into getting together and separating from this the people, because now I was hearing, and I'm not going to stay on it long, I'm hearing on TikTok that a white girl was asked the question, who would you rather deal with, a white man or a black man? She said, I'd rather deal with a black man so I could go into the hereafter. So they're waking up too, knowing that we're waking up now. So that's the question that I was speaking on. Thank you, long live the spirit of Sister
Thank you for your statement, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Sister Sardia. Do you have a comment or anything you want to make? And then I want to, you know, speak on something before we go into our next caller. Are you there, Sister?
No comment.
I understand. Okay, well, one thing I want to point out is, and we have several articles in the Final Call newspaper, the Nation of Islam's auditors, and I'm just going to highlight something from 2013. As one who is I study Dianetics, and I am a student auditor in the Nation of Islam, for the Nation of Islam, but we've had now at least three graduations. In 2013, it was the third for the Savior's Day in a row. And what the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan desired was to, he
to bring us to a tool. He said that he found a tool that would help us be better Muslims or be better at what we say we would like to do. And so in this, you know, in terms of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, accept our own, be ourselves, and to help our brothers and sisters. And we were asked to go in and to learn the training and to get this tool and to bring it back to our community. And so I'm not sure about any of the other references to lost sheep. That's how I'm going to state it. But on May 8th, 10, and I was there, and many of us were there within earshot, Minister Farrakhan first introduced Dianetics to the Nation of Islam's laborers. He introduced it to his student laborers across the country. And ever since that date, members of the nation have done everything possible to show their appreciation. We've followed his guidance, and now it appears as if we are poised to take it to an even higher level, and many have. And there are those who may bear witness that the benefit is great. You know, what we put into a thing, we get out of it. What we put into a our nation as believers, we're going to get out of it. And so we have Mariam Oddity at headquarters, the Nation of Islam flagship mosque at Mosque Mariam. And so I would encourage you all who are listening, if you want to find out more, then you can do that. We have Mariam Oddity, and I just bear witness on my life as one who has heard Minister Farrakhan and has delved into it as much as I could. I bear witness that even with all of the still flaws and everything that, of course, obviously as a human being I experience, I am a much better person, a much better Muslim. I understand the teachings. I am more closer to Allah God. My connection to him is strengthened. I can really understand the Quran even more, because one of the things that we learn, which is what Minister Farrakhan has consistently taught us from the time I even remember hearing his voice, was to research and study for ourselves and parse words, define words, and go to the deep root of words. And so I just wanted to point that out. Let's go to Brother Hoyle. Brother Hoyle, welcome to Elevated Places.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Charlene and Sister Sadia. Beautiful job. And beautiful show. You know, in one of your articles a long time ago, you were talking about just waking up black is you know, bad for your mental health in America, you know, and we suffer from PTSD. And a question for you, Sister Sadia, I know we have Dianetics, but are you going to implement, you know, this mental health thing? Because, like I said, with the situation with the brother, you know, like I said, with our nine ministries, you know, we're going to be dealing with, because the brother took the shot, you know, because that team, that owner mandated it with all the players, and the one white boy that left. But our people are waking, and all the white, the black people, you know, our young people are waking up to, they got the new movie out called Died Suddenly, and our young people are waking up to the, you know, the myocarditis and people dying. And there's a lot of people dying that they're not talking about, you know, these rappers and they, people that are taking a shot and they've died suddenly. So we're probably going to have, you know, ministries for that with the grief. But I was going to ask you, how are we going to set that up in the nation, you know, similar to like grief counseling? I just pray for our people that we don't die, and that's what the devil wants. Mass death, but as far as are you setting that up, Sister Sadia?
One second, Sister Sadia. Let me make a statement real quick before you do that. Do you mind, Sister?
Not at all.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So before we have Dianetics, and before we have the therapist and the methodology that Sister Sadia is bringing to us, we have the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We have the Holy Quran. We have prayer. We have the guidance, the divine guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We have the study guides. And so I would say just from Sister Charlene's own experience, if I could, as they say, if I could help somebody along the way with my journey, turn to Allah God. We turn to Allah God first and foremost. And we have the exalted Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we have the Messiah, the Jesus in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And what is outside of that are things that can aid with that, but they are not first. The teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Word of God is first. And so this is what I just wanted to say before you speak on that, because first and foremost, in fairness to our sister, and of course, Sister Saudi, I know you're going to answer, but programs and implementations of such come through our executive council. And so it's not going to go down up. It's going to come from the top. And so, but anyway, that's just my observation and opinion, because I want us to be careful. I want us to be very careful. I think we should. Let me say it like that. It is important to be mindful of what we are expressing, and I'm speaking to myself first. But, hey, it's all about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what his the divine guide and teacher and the Messiah in front of us is having. So I pray that my expression is coming across the way I intend it, but maybe some residual when we had a comment. And we don't know, you know, what it's important not to – and I'm not saying you're doing this, Brother Harl, right? You know, I'm not saying this at all, but I'm also being mindful in myself, which is why I didn't say anything to appear to exploit or take – you know, we don't know what's on the death warrant for our brother, but you're right, you know, the Florida Surgeon General, Dr. Ladapo, has given guidelines. They have issued guidelines for 18 to 39-year-olds, particularly specifically males, to not take the clot shot. But at any rate, thank you, Sister Saudi, and you too go. I don't know if you finished your question, Brother Harl, but I just wanted to say that because I didn't want anything misconstrued here about what there's nothing over the teachings. But go ahead, brother.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, sister and brother, thank you all for that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. You answered it right. That's the number one thing. I wanted to say this before the sister speak, and you're totally correct. And the minister talked about, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us a very, and this is the number one answer. I wanted to add to this, and I'm gone. It said, heaven by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. A Muslim is nothing. He or she is nothing and can achieve nothing and fulfill nothing without working. If you are poor, work. If you are rich, continue working. If you are burdened with seemingly unfair responsibilities, work. If you are happy, keep right on working. Idleness gives room for doubt and fears. If disappointments come, work. If your health is threatened, work. When faith is shaken, work. When dreams are shattered and hope seems dead, work. Work as if your life is in peril, because it is, really is. No matter what ails you, work. Work faithfully, work with him. Work for your mosque, work for your own. Work is the greatest remedy available for mental and physical afflictions. Work to improve self. And that's by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Sister Charlene and Sister Saudi. Beautiful show.
Thank you. All praises due to Allah. Sister Saudi, thank you for allowing me to express my little self. Go ahead.
Oh, and Sister Charlene, your expression was beautiful and most certainly on point. I cannot implement anything on behalf of the Nation of Islam, and we have a protocol, and by all means, we have to follow that protocol. And so, but just on a personal level, I do, you know, see clients who have all kinds of situations, and those include, you know, dealing with grief and loss. And, you know, everybody's expression of grief looks different, and there isn't a cookie cutter way to grieve, because it looks different depending on the loss that we've experienced. And so sometimes we don't always we will question sometimes how, I'm sorry, I have something in my throat. We will question sometimes how we grieve because we think maybe we aren't crying enough or maybe I'm not sad enough. Excuse me. And it looks different for everyone. So, I always, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on. But I always just try and encourage clients to, you know, allow their expression of grief to be as organic as possible because it looks different for everyone. And and to really give yourself grace in the process. Because it's, some days you may be able to have a somewhat normal level of function, and you may have a day where you just can't do a thing, and that's okay because it looks different for everyone. But certainly, allowing yourself to experience the emotions is important, and not suppress those emotions.
That's right. Because you said they're going to come through somewhere or another. Thank you for that, sister. We do. I have some more questions. Here's one. Where did the question go? Before, and you may have spoken to this, but I think it's a more extensive. Before we get to our therapist, so before people get to their therapist for a series of formal meetings, what can be done in general for them to start moving toward better mental health?
well, I think in what I shared earlier about having a sense of self-awareness, I think that's really important, acknowledging whenever there's a shift in your mood, if you see yourself feeling down, if you are, in certain environments around certain people, those are things to kind of take note because sometimes we will, again, have these experiences and we don't think much of them. You know, if every time I'm in a particular environment, I may feel sad. I may feel like I'm not heard. I may feel invisible. I may have all of these emotions and feelings that really don't feel good. Well, that may be an indication that, maybe this is an environment that I shouldn't be in, or maybe in the looking in our relationships with people, you know, whether it's our friends, family, our coworkers, we notice that the relationship isn't reciprocal. You know, maybe we're constantly giving and there isn't any balance. So being able to call out what it is that you may see, I think that's kind of a first step in seeing or before you may reach out to a clinician, just kind of seeing, well, what do I have going on? You know, sometimes not everybody has experienced this major kind of trauma in their life. You know, we all have. We live in America. I mean, we live in this wicked world, so we've definitely experienced trauma. But, you know, I may see a client who is wanting to process maybe, you know, the end of a relationship or the loss of a job that they really love. And so, you know, there's all these different things that's important to them. where they may need to address their feelings or unpack whatever emotions that they have. But really, you know, when we have, when we try and practice as much as possible self-awareness, that can put us in a better position to make a determination. You know, I think I need to talk to someone regarding, you know, this particular relationship or these experiences that I'm having, whether it's in my workplace or whether it's in my family or whatever it is. But if we're not aware, we may just continue on and on feeling down or feeling, you know, unheard or feeling various kinds of emotions, but we don't do anything about it. And so, you know, if we can acknowledge that, you know, there's a shift, if we can acknowledge various changes in our affect, then that's a starting point to maybe realizing that maybe you need to speak to someone to get a bit more clarity.
Thank you. Thank you, sister.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate your response and your time, and I appreciate you all calling in and engaging. And I want to say before we go to before we get to the closing remarks, sister, as well as the announcements, I don't want to leave out the Bible, you know, that book of scripture, and the Holy Quran verifies it, because, you know, that's where our people are. That's where they're locked into. So whatever name you call him by, run, flee, fly, get in the bosom of Allah God, because it's that time. You know, it is that time. And so whatever therapies that you choose to use, may they be successful for you. And let me not knock you or you me for the ones that we do choose, because I think that is something that is also a thing that we could do less of, which is down each other, and we can lift each other up. I'm not saying, right, sister, Sadia, let us go off the rails. You know, we don't let our brother and sister do something that is contrary to their health and their well-being, and we know something can help them. But at the same time, people do have choices. And what Charlene is saying is choose wisely.
Yes. Absolutely.
Meet you. How about that? Sister's idea. How about, let me choose, right? Look, how about your closing remarks, and then I'm going to make announcements. Rescue me, Lord.
Yeah, well, it has indeed been an honor and a pleasure. I love the work that I do. I love being able to help people and people that look like me, and I love being able to be that one that individuals feel that they can be safe with and be vulnerable with and have someone who can help them in a way without judgment, without, feeling as if your business is going to be out in the street. You know, and that's really important, you know, feeling that you can share and know that what is shared isn't going to go beyond the therapy space. And that's really important. And we know that we deal with so much stress, and we deal with so much pain, and we deal with so much hurt that we see on a day-to-day basis, let alone some of the years or decades of pain and trauma and experiences we've all have seen in our lifetime. So I would say to anyone that is considering therapy to reach out to someone, to find someone that can perhaps be a good fit for you and allow yourself to get the healing that you need in terms of allowing yourself to address whatever issues that you have, because all of us can benefit from talking to someone and getting the assistance that we need from someone who is going to treat you with respect, is going to treat you with dignity, and that will allow you to be vulnerable and to give you what you, or give you the desire that you may have to be healed. So, and I'm thankful that I'm able to fulfill part of my life's purpose as a clinician. To Charlene?
I think we've had technical difficulty.
I hit my mute by mistake. I was saying, tell us about your book and so we can discuss it. I apologize.
Oh. Yes, ma'am. In November of 2022, I completed I completed two things. At the end of November, I completed a therapy journal called Therapied, and I did the therapy journal in response to a lot of my clients who would come into session. And they would say, oh, you know, I wanted to talk to you about something, but I can't remember. And, you know, that would happen constantly. And so I just took some time to create a journal that clients, and I mean, certainly it's not just for my clients, it's for anyone who is involved in therapy, but it allows clients to just be able to process what happened in the therapy session, because it's really important to try and recall the points that may have been discussed, to jot down any homework assignments, and then throughout between that session and the next session to be able to just write down, you know, any notable things or occurrences between sessions. And there's also a end of the week mental health check-in just to kind of see where you're at in terms of your emotions. So that was just, again, born out of my clients always wanting to kind of share information but not having it in a cohesive space or place. So I created therapy journal. But I also, at the beginning of November, published the Better Self Journal, and it is, it's been a labor of love. It was something that I decided that I wanted to do something. Probably the ideal came at some point in 2020, as I mentioned earlier in the program, how I got this influx of clients. And one of the common themes was, particularly with my millennial clients, female clients, issues surrounding self-esteem and issues surrounding self-worth. And I wanted to do something that could in part help to motivate, inspire, and encourage women. The journal is designed for women, but I mean, I guess men could use it too, but in my mind, I designed it for women. And but I wanted
soap and
it to
shampoo,
be
why not?
Right, you know, hey, why not? But it's a journal that, you know, has representation of women of color, Black women, you know, words of encouragement. So it's not just a blank note journal. And I just wanted something that could help to inspire and motivate. And so I it took me some time to kind of, you know, collect my thoughts, to have it look the way I wanted it to look. And I'm so very pleased. I commissioned this amazing young sister, who's the daughter of one of my close friends, Sister Naima. She was the illustrator for the cover, and the everything that I envisioned that I wanted this journal to be, I think it is exactly as it was in my mind. And so I'm just, you know, really thrilled to see the end product. And I hope and pray that, you know, anyone that has it and use it can see it as what it was designed for. Yeah, this is definitely the Better Self Journal was, you know, it's a labor of love. And it is available on all Amazon platforms, and it's available on my website, as well as the Therapy Journal. My website is www.themuslimtherapist.org. And also, I can be reached via email, themuslimtherapist19@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Sister. Thank you for being our guest in Elevated Places. Thank you to the listening audience. Thank you to the callers and to our producer, Sister Donna, our executive producer, Brother Darius. And look, visit MinisterAva.com and Savior's Day. It's Savior's Day, NOI.org, for more details on the War of Armageddon has begun. That is the theme for Minister Farrakhan's address. I'm Sister Charlene Muhammad, and it has been a pleasure to be your guest host here on Elevated Places. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you.
My heart, girl, I care for you. When I look into your